My name is John Peake, and I was born on the 26th of August, 1924.
And how did you start in hockey, John?
Well, we first played at school. I think I was just under 16, and I think they didn't have spaces for youngsters to play to begin with, but there was a spare field, and so we were allowed to start just under 16, and then I played the next 2 years before I left school.
And was this competitive against other schools?
No, this was just to learn to play. I was surprised how interesting the game was.
So when was your first competitive game?
Oh, I think I played for the school later on, and then we obviously played against, I suppose, other schools. I can't remember, I'm afraid, which other schools particularly, but they would be fairly local in those days, because this was, I was, when I was 16, that was 1930, let's see. Sorry, I'm missing out. 1938 was when I left. 38 was when I went there. 42 was when I left. So this would be during the war. Oh.
And this was Repton, was it?
Repton, yes.
Did you leave school and go straight on to university, or did you do something else?
No, what happened was that anybody who was involved with, interested in mathematics and things, was likely to be moved by the government to go to a university to do engineering. They expected you to take an extra maths before you got in and so on, but they then directed you to university, and thereafter they directed you where else you went after that. So I was very lucky, and they gave me a scholarship or an exhibition or something to help. Otherwise, I don't think I would have actually been able to get to university. And I lived in Cambridge, so I was delighted to be there.
So where was this, in college in Cambridge?
It was Clare College in Cambridge.
And did you play hockey for Cambridge?
Yes, I played for the university in the second year.
And were there any other notable hockey players of your time there?
Well, I think there probably were, but I have difficulty in remembering, I'm afraid. I would have to look it up.
So you played at university?
Yes.
Did you play any representative hockey at that stage?
No, not when I was at university. And then what happened is I went into the, I was directed actually, into either I could go down a coal mine or I could go to the Ministry of Aircraft Production and design aircraft wings, or I could go to, what I did do was, the Royal Corps of Naval Constructors, which was obviously the one that was very exciting and very interesting. And so I spent 4 years training with them, dressed in uniform as a naval officer. Nobody could tell the difference, peculiarly enough. 18 months in a dockyard and 6 months at sea. The 6 months at sea was especially so that the naval officers there could tell me how much they felt the ships could be improved in their design. I did at the end tell them that if everything that they had suggested that should be done, it would all be fine, but I'm afraid the ship wouldn't float. Anyway, then I spent 2 years at the Naval College at Greenwich, and that was the chance to play hockey and other games in London. Otherwise, I've never got anywhere, because you really had to, it was very helpful to be in London because of the matches and the practice and so on. And I played for Mid-Surrey, which was a chance, as well as the college and the Navy.
Now, Mid-Surrey, if I'm right, is West London, and Greenwich is way over in the east.
A bit, but
where were you living?
South, in the college. Oh. Marvellous, looked after, no trouble at all. The wrens used to come and they would bring tea in the morning, and there was one who said she didn't mind that, but she was particularly angry because one of the people didn't actually drink the tea. He put his finger in it after a bit, and when it got cold he realised he ought to get up. She was very angry about that.
So when did you start playing representative hockey at county level?
Well, it was really, I suppose, with the Navy, and with the combined services.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they tend to choose people to play for England is that they look at the various games, north, south, east, west, and combined services. And so playing for the combined services, I was luckily noted and given a chance to play in the, I think it's the probables and the possibles and so on, and then luckily got in and played for England.
When was this, your first game for England?
47, I should say.
So was this the resumption of the internationals after the war, or had they been playing a few internationals?
No, I think this was fairly soon afterwards. I'm not sure if this was the first one after the war, but...
Can you remember your first game?
I'm trying to... Yes, it was against Wales. And then we played Scotland and Ireland. Ireland didn't play in the Olympics with Great Britain, as you know.
Mm.
And so... but they did play in the England-Scotland-Wales matches. So that was a great thrill.
How did your family feel about you being selected for England?
Oh, I'm sure they were chuffed is the word, I believe. They did come and watch the odd game, I think, yes.
So you played for England in 1947, and
yes.
The Olympics was the following year.
Yes, I'm not sure really quite, but 47-48 was a sort of season, and so...
Right.
It could have been I played first. Some of the matches may have been 47 or 48. I'm not sure. They were around the winter of November, December, and then January, February sort of thing.
So how did the Great Britain selection happen?
Well, I think there must have been a possibles v probables match, which I don't remember, but that's possibly how I got in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they usually do. They'll pick the possibles and probables from the people they see in the north, south, east, west matches. And then they play possibles and probables, and then they'll pick a team.
And how did you hear about your Great Britain selection for the Olympics?
Oh, that was a different thing. That was a letter, which I think I've kept a copy just for fun, saying that you've been chosen. So... And then I've forgotten how many were of us, about 15 or so were chosen, obviously from Scotland and Wales as well.
And did you get together for training?
No, not a lot. We did have one weekend where we went to play with the local team and a county team, but that was about it. Most of us, I think, were fairly fit, one way or the other. But we didn't do all the massive training and everything else that goes on now. I mean, that was quite exciting, I'm sure, nowadays.
So did you find it easy to gel together as a team?
Well, you see, we hardly saw those people from Wales and Scotland in those days until we almost got to the... stage of being together right towards the end when we went to an RAF base where we were put up. It was in Uxbridge. It was an RAF base.
Oh.
And
this piece of paper has...
Well, the problem was, you see, there was rationing was still going on. In fact, rationing went on until Elizabeth reminded me, my wife, that it went on until we were married. I think I did get a sweater that I had to give so many coupons for.
So did you get extra rations?
Very lucky, yes. There were two sorts of rations for most people during that stage. There was those who had heavy jobs were given an extra ration, and we got the extra ration type of thing. But because I was at the Naval College, it didn't really apply in the same way. I was very lucky. But I think I was allowed to have fried eggs, really rather specially.
Oh, yes.
That was a big deal.
Not powdered egg.
No. Maybe it was.
this is a piece of paper that's got the Uxbridge Competitor's Guide to the 14th Olympiad and a map of the Olympic Centre in Uxbridge with all the facilities and the dining halls, cafeterias, bank.
Yes, it was just an RAF RAF camp. That's all it was. Somebody they obviously let us use that.
And did this house all the teams?
No, it was
just
a
hockey.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, but you didn't really talk to anybody, I'm afraid, in other hockey teams. It wasn't until right at the end when there was a gathering of a sort of dance where we all went to. That's about the only time we almost saw any of the other competitors.
So did you not watch any of the other?
Well, no, we were sort of busy in training and taken to and fro and so on. In fact, we didn't train at the RAF camp. There wasn't actually a field, but we did go somewhere else, I seem to remember, each day and practice and get trained and so on. I remember it quite well because when we went once, there was a chap running around the edge. He was there running when we arrived, and we were there half an hour or something, and he was still running around. His name was Zatopek.
Oh.
You may have heard of him.
Yes.
We discovered that afterwards. He did rather well.
Emil Zatopek.
Emil Zatopek.
Yes. Extremely famous man. First man to do the 5,000 and 10,000 double, I think.
Quite extraordinary. Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes, he was a wonderful guy.
So do you remember the first match of the Olympics? I think he played Afghanistan.
No, we played them second.
Right.
I will have to remember the first one, but we drew, unfortunately.
Oh, that's Switzerland then.
That was Switzerland. We drew against Switzerland, 1-1. I can look all these things up if you want. And we were obviously rather worried about this because only three matches, and. We hoped we'd do all right for the other two, but to draw the first one was not the best thing that could have happened. Well, then we played America, and we managed to win. I think we scored 11 goals, and that. Well, the Americans actually are not frightfully keen on hockey. I remember I was in America for a year or two. And somebody came up to me and was very respectful and said, gee, you played in the American, you played in the Olympic Games, you see. And he was very, very nice about it. And he came back about a fortnight later and said, oh, I've just discovered. You weren't playing ice hockey, you were playing field hockey. He said, only women play that over here. So, anyway, that was a relief. And then we played Afghanistan after that. And that was, I don't know, several goals, but we were all right there. We were lucky with the draw, really. And we didn't have two serious people.
And what position did you play?
I was outside right, which is the easiest, in those days, was the easiest place on the field, I thought, because you stayed up there and waited to be passed to. You didn't have to go and collect it very much. Nowadays, there's only four forwards. You have to do your stuff all the time. Hard going.
But you must have been quite quick.
Well, hopefully I was all right over 2 yards. it was useful accelerating.
Yes.
I don't think long distance was my stuff. In fact, when I was at Greenwich, I was doing trying to keep fit. I was doing a sort of 3-mile thing around Greenwich Park. And somebody said, well, you know, if you're doing what you're doing, I think you need to be much better to do accelerating and decelerating. You don't want to do long runs. So I played a lot of squash. That helped.
Yeah. So you then went on, you won the group,
mm-hmm.
and you went on to a semi-final?
Yes, that's right. That was after those other matches, and that was at Wembley. Yes.
The Wembley tradition for the women's game is that it's packed full of very noisy, 65,000
yes.
very noisy schoolgirls.
Yes, I know.
So what was the atmosphere at Wembley when you played the semi-final?
Well, relatively speaking, from hockey terms, very, very unusual, because I think you don't really, really get many, many people watching hockey, but I think there were 30,000 or something. It never happened before, never happened again.
Big crowd.
Or maybe that was the final. That was probably the final.
So the semi-final and the final were both played
at Wembley? Both played at Wembley, yes.
And what happened in the semi-final?
Well, we managed to beat Pakistan, and we were thrilled to bits because we'd heard so much about the Indians and so on. They'd split, of course, between India and Pakistan by that time. I'm not sure when that was, but that was sometime before.
I think that was only 47, wasn't it?
It was soon after the war. Yes. So we managed to beat the Pakistanis, but the Indians were far too good. We thought that we would be rather better than them in one way, and that was that the ground, the turf, was very thick. Somehow or other, I think it had been redone or something, and it had been extremely thick. And we thought that they'd tap it around on very hard pitches and so on, and we thought that they would find it more difficult. But they tapped it around just the same, and some of it went into the goals.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, about four of those. They scored a goal very quickly, actually. Still, we were glad to get through the semi-final.
Still a notable feat.
Well, we feel sorry for the people in 1952 because they had a slightly different draw and they played India in the semi-final. So that was unlucky.
Yes. So after the final, there was the medal ceremony. Do you remember that?
It was not a sort of, I was going to say, a vast occasion, as it were. We all turned up and thrilled a bit, of course. I think I did have a photograph of that. So that was great stuff.
And can you remember who presented the medal?
Lord Burleigh, I think. Oh. And I think he was the chap who was in charge of the Olympics procedures in those days. He used to live not far from Peterborough, where I lived, eventually.
And after the Olympics, did you carry on playing for Mid-Surrey?
No, what happened is that after the Olympics, I'd finished my 2 years at Greenwich Naval College, and so then I started on an actual job, finished my training. And I went to a place called Hasler near Portsmouth, and that was where they did tests on ships. They had a long 400-yard tank, and they used to tow model boats up and down and predict the speed, etc., and redesign and help solve all those sorts of things. And they also had a way in which the water was whizzed round through tunnels, and propellers were stuck into those tunnels in such a way they could tell the thrust and the push and everything else. And so they put the two together, and hopefully they could work out how fast the ship would go. And then my job was to be the ship trials officer, and I had to go out in the ships, and I used to remember telling the captain that please go as fast as you can, because if you go a little bit slower than in fact is part of the expectation, then it is harder to explain away not so good results. Whereas if you go a bit faster, you're probably safer.
And did they always do that?
Usually, yes. Although not always did they listen to what. If it was a battleship, for example, I think the captain knew what he was doing anyway. But it was a mixture between the battleship and the cruisers and tiny little boats. So it was quite a mixture. Good fun. Enjoyed myself. So I was there for 2 years.
And did you play hockey when you were in Portsmouth?
Well, what happened was I played a little bit more hockey, yes, for the local club. But it wasn't long after that I did my back in. It's called a slip disc. You may have heard of that.
Yeah.
And that was a standard issue.
And was that the end of your hockey playing career then?
Not entirely, no. It was for some time. In fact, what happened was that I then got better after my disc, and so I did play. I think I played in one of the possible and probable matches after, and that must have been 2 or 3 years later, 53 or something like that. But by the time I was a bit better, but there was a chap called John Ivans, and I used to play for the local hockey club. and he was the outside right. So he was well in position there anyway, and he was very good, of course. And he was very unfortunate not to play for the Olympics. I've forgotten quite why it was, but it's only every 4 years, and it was somehow or other it didn't fit in. Mm. Or he didn't. But he did do a lot of work for the Olympics. He used to help with the teams and all sorts of things. So, J.F.B. Ivans. But what happened was that not long after that, I left the Royal Corps of Naval Constructors anyway, and was going into industry. If anybody was, it was a wonderful job, but the pay was miserable. Their lordships, who organised the pay for the Royal Corps, had a meeting that had been going on for a year or two. We were waiting for the results of this, and it was to see what the pay should be. We called it the pay. It was called the career opportunities, I think, is what they called it. We called it the pay, and when it came out, I'm afraid several of us left within a few weeks. Mm. Because if we didn't move then, we were sort of, I'm going to say getting on, but the chances really were getting into industry sooner the better. And so I had a year with a consulting company, and then a year, and then I joined a company I stayed with for 35 years.
And that was Baker Perkins?
That's correct, yes.
They presumably did not build ships?
No.
I'm
basically an engineer, you see, and so therefore...
you just transferred your skills from one type of application to another?
Yeah, I think I was fair enough. I went into the drawing office. And then I was involved with one of the companies and so on. So to start with, I was a personal assistant to somebody, one of the members of the board of management, one of the Bakers, Baker Perkins. That was the way they got odd people like myself into the company. And when they knew a little bit more about them, they could then decide whether or not or what sort of job they might have in the company. So that was a good way of doing it.
And this must have been the early 50s, is that right?
51, yes.
And you stayed there for 35 years?
Yes, I left 1986, I think, or 7.
And you managed to, you were awarded a CBE?
Yes, that was nothing to do with sport.
No,
that was purely to do with the
industry.
Mm-hmm.
You went to an investiture at the palace for that?
Oh, yes, Great Thrill, yes.
And who invested you?
Oh, the Queen.
The Queen?
Yes, yes.
That must have been a real thrill.
Yes, live out on that for years. Great Thrill, yes. Even the family joined me.
Did she say anything to you in particular?
No, you have to know. You mustn't speak first.
True.
I probably said thank you or something.
But a real highlight.
That was a highlight, yes.
One thing you haven't told me about, which I read about, was that you carried an Olympic torch.
Oh, yes,
just
yes.
Before the Olympics. Oh, a picture. Lovely.
What happened is anybody who had taken part in the Olympics was given the opportunity to carry a torch if they would like to.
And this was for the 2012 Olympics?
Yes. And so I had a letter, which is... saying, would I like to, which is very nice. And so I think I was one of the eldest around people doing it. And so I was very, very thrilled to do that.
And how far did you have to carry it?
Oh, I think it was only about half a mile. It was going to be the very short stretches, but the person who was supposed to start it off near Peterborough didn't turn up. So I had to do the first one and the second one. And although I had worked out myself just exactly how much to run and how much not to run, this was twice as long, so I wasn't really quite sure. So I walked quite a bit of the way.
Quite right. And did you get to keep the torches?
Yes, we were allowed to. I did present it to my prep school.
Oh.
A little school in Cambridge called St Faith's. They seemed quite pleased. Nice.
Sure,
they
were. Now, you've watched some hockey since then. Did you get to the 2012 Olympics to watch the hockey?
Yes, indeed. And I also got to the opening of the hockey pitch. I don't know if you know about that, but the hockey pitch was specially built for the occasion. And there was a gathering of all the...
the famous hockey blue pitch, yes. With many notables.
We all walked round. The oldest first. Ha ha.
You leading the way.
Funnily enough, Tony Nunn, who is here, was 90 2 days ago. Well, he had a 90th celebration party. So I was able to go to that. you know all these people, Tony Nunn.
I'm not sure that I would. Oh, I recognise, yes, I recognise that one. I play golf with him. Chris Langhorn.
Oh, yes. That's
yes,
another
I
name.
Him very well.
Quite young.
I'll tell him that. He'll be delighted.
Really?
That anyone thinks of him as young.
That's Tony Nunn, as he was. He played for the Navy too. In fact, he was at Greenwich too. He was in the Naval Constructor. So that's how...
Fertile ground. Did you know Alan Walker?
That rings a bell.
Ran naval hockey. He died recently.
Yes, I do remember, yes.
And
yes.
He ran naval hockey for many years.
Yes.
A bit after your time, I believe.
Yes. Yes. He lived down in the Portsmouth area.
Yes, he did.
Yes, indeed, yes. Yes, because
lovely man.
There was a gathering at at this place called Hesler, and I went to see him and had a chance to meet him at that stage.
Mm. So did you watch some of the matches at the 2012 Olympics?
Yes, indeed. And we were also given, because we played in the Olympics, we were given a free ticket to go to the opening ceremony. That was very special. I was able to take Tony Nunn with me, because he's not as mobile as he used to be.
So what did you think of the hockey at that at the Olympics?
Unbelievable. Even all the rules have changed, of course, and so the 35 minutes of distance run and so on, but I mean things like long corners and bullies off and all those sorts of things are all different now and harder. And of course people train so much and they're so much fitter. As I say, although we thought we were quite fit, it's nothing like they have to do now.
So did you think the speed of the game has...
Oh yes indeed. Well, you see, I only played on the grass and so on, and it wasn't until the... and even the sticks, of course, were changed. You know, we had this long stick thing that nowadays has all changed. So the whole thing has speeded up in every way.
When you played against the Indians and the Pakistanis in the 1948 Olympics, were they still using the long, what we call sticks, or were they using the short ones?
No, they'd had the little ones for a long time. I don't think ours has ever got quite so hooked as short as theirs, have they? They're nearly there.
One that was introduced that was very curly.
Yes, that's right.
But it didn't last.
We're halfway there.
Did you find that difficult, playing against people with different types of stick?
I don't know. I can't really remember that being specifically a problem. I mean, it was a problem insofar as they were so much better at tapping the ball around, but I don't think one really noticed it in quite the same way.
And what about the new rules? Are there any new rules you particularly like or you particularly dislike?
I'm not sure if I'm fully up on the new rules. I think it's all the changes that I mentioned. Well, I mean, obviously, being allowed to do what we used to call sticks, that's all changed. And I think there was some discussion not recently about using back sticks. You've got to be very careful not to use the end of it. That's cheating.
How the umpires can tell the difference, I don't know.
That's just what I was going to say. tough being an umpire.
So you've been involved in the hockey museum, I know, because you've been to several of the events there.
Oh, yes.
Brought your medal down to show everybody.
Yes. No, once, twice. They've done a great job starting all that up. Lots of hard work and so on. But luckily, of course, it's nearer where we are now. Where we were in Peterborough, where we lived for 41 years in place, it was really rather difficult to get to South London and so on. I mean, Tony Nunn's 90th birthday party yesterday, or on Sunday, you know, is just a rail trip not too far. Otherwise, it's changing London. And what one used to do was to try and work out something and do two or three things at once and stay the weekend.
Yes. So do you get to watch any other hockey now?
I'm afraid I haven't really done that.
Can you remember the players you played with and against? And do any of them really stand out as being very special?
Well, they were all... I remember Walford was a name... and the centre half, who's I shall think of in 10 minutes' time, he was brilliant. But Borrett was the top of the pops, as it were. He was inside left. He was absolutely outstanding, hockey and squash, and quite extraordinary. So they were probably the outstanding players.
What about the people you played against?
Well, the funny thing is that because we didn't have any chats with them, or you just turned up, played against them, so you really didn't know them at all.
Oh, right.
This, at the Olympics or... So it was very, very strange, really. In fact, another thing that's happened with the different types of no longer grass is that... because people will play, and there'll be only one of those courts, they play from 10 till 11 till 12 and so on, instead of all getting together and having a pint afterwards, that sort of social gathering doesn't seem to happen in the same way. Mm. So it's not as chatty as it used to be, which is pity.
Yes, I think that's true. But I think the hockey family people always refer to still seems to exist, that...
Mm.
Whenever you go to hockey,
there are
always people you know.
Oh, I'm sure of that, yes.
To,
yes,
always
indeed.
Always people you remember.
Yes.
And you pick up as if it was yesterday.
Yes, well, this is the great thing, too, about being more ancient, and that is that some of the people who you've lost touch with and you knew well when you were younger or you played hockey with way back, you meet them again and you can set off where you left off. No trouble at all. It's very, very nice to do that.
And have you made any really good friends through hockey that you've kept in touch with? You mentioned Tony Nunn.
Yes, but you see, again, I only met him again, as it were, a few years ago. So I didn't really see him or any of the contemporaries and so on, because one was, I think I went off, as I explained, on the job, and then I was moved to Peterborough for the next job, and really didn't catch up with any of these people. I did actually play for Lincolnshire. There was the local club, in Peterborough Club, and then the Lincolnshire, for, I suppose, 2 or 3 years. But then there was a sort of feeling in the company that it wasn't so good to be away on a Wednesday afternoon.
Oh.
And I think I just gave up, hockey.
So county games were played on a Wednesday afternoon?
Yes. Very strange.
Yes. That must have limited the people they could select.
Well, I don't quite know how that worked, actually, but I do remember that was one of the peculiarities.
Yes.
Maybe it was just Lincolnshire or that area. I haven't a clue.
I always ask this, it sounds a bit of a silly question to you, but what are your standout memories from your hockey career, looking backwards?
Oh dear, you should have given me some notice of this. I suppose the Olympics, obviously, but something you can never forget, as it were. But it was all a great thrill to be. Every time you got into another team, if you were chosen to play for something or other, as you gradually got older back from school, every time you got into another stage up, you were thrilled a bit, actually. No change. Didn't think you'd do any better. So that was the sort of thing that went along with one, and one was lucky for it did go on for some time.
When you say you didn't think it could get any better, did you not harbour ambitions to play for England when you were 16, 17, 18?
No idea. I mean, never even thought about it. No, I don't think you think you'd get that far at all. I think occasionally there are people who do think they want to do that, and then they're very disappointed if they don't. Whereas otherwise, it's a great thrill every stage.
John, it's been a great delight to hear all your hockey stories, and to an honour to speak to an Olympian and a silver medal winner from 1948. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, well, thank you very much.